The third case on today's oral argument calendar is case number A23-1870, Hebert Greenhouses of Minnesota, Inc. versus City of Mountain Lake. I assume counsel are familiar with our usual procedures. Appellant will have, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and appellant will have an opportunity for rebuttal of 5 minutes. As you can see, there are, we are a three-judge panel today. Two judges are present on the bench. Judge Harris, due to unavoidable circumstances, is appearing remotely. When you are at the lectern, if he asks a question, you obviously can turn and see him on the screen in the courtroom. We have determined that it would be proper protocol when answering the question to turn forward and speak to the bench, the two judges on the bench. Of course, there may be back and forth colloquy and so on, but that is the sort of the protocol we've established for this hybrid argument. If there's nothing further, counsel for appellant, you may approach. Please identify yourself and your clients, and then you may begin.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Joseph Ganji. I represent Hebert Greenhouses of Minnesota and Paul Christensen. I'll collectively refer to my clients either as Mr. Christensen or simply the Greenhouse. We're here today asking the court to reverse a resolution passed by the City of Mountain Lake declaring the Greenhouse property to be a nuisance. It declared the property a nuisance based on two distinct conditions on the property, one referring to the vehicles that are on the property, second referring to the vegetation on the property that's been identified by the city as rank growth. We're asking for a reversal of this resolution for several reasons. I won't be able to go into all of those reasons today, but I did want to highlight a few areas for the court, most notably the sufficiency of the evidence, the sufficiency of the resolution itself, and the application of section 561.19.
Can I just ask you what you think of this analytical framework that I came up with when I was reading the various briefs? So I would organize your arguments into three categories. The first one would be the statutory-based arguments. So we have agricultural operations, the overbreath of the city code, with the code versus chapter 168, and then that's the implements of husbandry exception. Then sufficiency of the evidence would be my second analytical bucket. And the third one would be the constitutional challenges. The ordinances are overbroad, the resolution is too vague to be enforced, and your opportunity to be heard. What do you think of that as an analytical framework for your arguments on appeal?
I think that would be a correct analytical framework to kind of lump those arguments into those buckets. Those are essentially what the arguments are.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to start with some brief comments on the application of Section 561.19. That statute protects agricultural operations from being declared a private or public nuisance. I believe this matter is preempted by that statute. Looking at the arguments, there appears to be kind of two main issues on that. One would be whether this greenhouse is in an agriculturally zoned area, and second, whether there's been a significant alteration. With respect to...
Let's talk about that.
Sure.
So, as I understand it, the business ceased operating in 2015.
I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor. I don't believe there's... The business never ceased operating. It's certainly not what it once was, but it still does some kind of greenhouse activity.
Well, its license lapsed.
The administrative dissolution, is that what you're referring
yes.
to? Correct. The Secretary of State issued an administrative dissolution of the corporation. However, I don't believe that impacts the fact that the business continued to operate in some capacity.
And your client never colloquially re-upped the license?
I don't believe that's happened.
Okay.
But was it a retail operation before?
It was a greenhouse operation before, correct.
Right, but with customers arriving on site?
Partly. They also grew crops and they transported crops and had other customers that they delivered crops to as well.
So other than the mulberry trees, when did your clients start growing mulberry trees?
I don't believe the record actually shows when he started growing those mulberry trees.
Would that, those be the cropping activities post 2014 or 15?
Those are cropping activities that are currently going on, but those aren't the whole scope of the cropping activities that were going on between 2014 and today. There were other activities as well that just aren't in the record.
Okay.
On the idea of the significant alteration, because I think that's what these questions are kind of geared towards, a couple things with that. One, as an exception to the statute, I believe the city would have the burden to prove that there's been a significant alteration. I don't believe that's happened. But second, even if there's been a significant alteration, that doesn't defeat the statute itself. It only resets the two-year period. And so even if we're to assume that there's been a significant alteration in 2014 or 15 or 16 or what have you, that merely resets that two-year period. And today we're well beyond that two-year period. And so the statute would still apply to this situation.
Does the application of the statute depend on the meaning of the word crops?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
I think there is a series of nouns. It seemed to me none of the others would apply, but that crops might be the only one. I'm not sure. I mean, there's no livestock, poultry, or dairy there, right?
Looking at the statute, in that list, the crops piece would be what would apply there, correct?
Is that defined by statute?
Not that I have seen.
Being a Midwesterner, my understanding of crops is usually cash crops, row crops, commodities that are raised, that are harvested, sold to the marketplace. I don't think of trees as crops. I know, you know, of course, a lot of trees give off fruit. We're not in California, we're in Minnesota. So I'm just wondering if that's an issue, whether mulberry trees truly are crops.
I believe it's accurate to say there are many tree farms in Minnesota, and those would be considered crops. Whether they're Christmas trees or mulberry trees or any kind of tree that are, it's an agricultural crop that's grown and they're sold.
I think of orchards if we're talking about fruit, and I think mulberries are fruit.
Correct.
You're not saying it's an orchard that he has.
It's not an orchard. They are growing in the greenhouse.
It's unusual to grow trees in a greenhouse.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
the record would probably be silent on that.
Probably.
I'm sorry, I might have gotten you off track. That
sure.
Wasn't an issue you mentioned, but it did occur to me that I wonder if we also have to overcome that hurdle about whether mulberry trees are crops. Whether mulberries are crops.
Sure. And
has he sold any mulberries?
Not at this point, Your Honor. At least as of the date of the hearing, he hadn't sold any. They're kind of a long-term crop. The other piece to the statute, just briefly, I'd encourage the court not to focus so much on the label that's placed on the zoning district by the municipality. The object of the statute is to protect agricultural operations from being declared a public or private nuisance. It has to be in an agriculturally zoned area. In this case, it's in the commercial general zone. Greenhouses are in allowed use within that zone. Greenhouses, in my view, are agriculture. They produce crops. And I would encourage the court to not look solely on the label, but to look at the underlying use that's allowed here in this case.
So under subdivision 2561.19, agriculture operation not a nuisance, and the subpart 3 says operates according to generally accepted agricultural practices, and I think the record is silent about generally accepted agricultural practices when it comes to propagating mulberry trees.
I think that's fair.
Growing mulberry trees, or what you do with mulberry trees.
I think that's fair, Your Honor. There's no argument here that they're not operating according to any kind of acceptable practices. They've been operating for decades and decades. And so, again, what we're looking at is an agricultural operation that has been established for an extremely long time.
Changed, but really changed in the 2000s.
Correct. Significantly altered does not mean a change to the crop product produced. And so we also have that piece of the statute. So even if we're going to change the crop to a mulberry crop, which is going on today, that still does not meet the definition of being significantly altered.
I want to talk about the constitutional challenges. Typically, when someone raises a procedural due process issue, they analyze it under the Matthews test. You didn't do that in your brief. I was wondering if there was a reason why you didn't do that.
There's no particular reason, Your Honor. There's a few due process issues that are involved. Is the court looking at something, one of the particular arguments?
Well, it's the opportunity to be heard. I mean, you know
sure.
What the Matthews test is. So.
Sure. Right. And the due process argument, you know, the notice and opportunity to be heard, of course, is changes based on what the procedure is. It's not quite set in stone. In this case, when we have a nuisance and the municipality is essentially trying to take property without just compensation and make you pay for it on top of it, I believe that the notice needs to be a little bit more robust than what we've experienced here. There needs to be a citation to not only the ordinance that's being alleged violated, but then also a factual basis behind it.
I didn't read that the municipality is trying to take the property. They just want it cleaned up.
They want to clean up the vegetation, but as far as the vehicles, they're all intent on taking those vehicles.
Okay. When I think of a taking, I think of condemnation. But they haven't. That's not the realm we're in here.
No. We're not dealing with the buildings themselves. Briefly on sufficiency of the evidence, this is a quasi-judicial proceeding, and so there needs to be. The Mount Lake needs to hear evidence, make findings of fact, make conclusions based on those findings. And here, of course, we're dealing with specific ordinances that are at issue. And so any findings that are made need to comply with and meet the elements of those ordinances. A brief example where I think really illustrates why this did not happen here is the reference to junk vehicles. Mount Lake's brief in their last paragraph calls this case all about 19 junk vehicles. It's always been a question to me why these vehicles are actually junk vehicles, and it's never been explained until now on appeal. And on appeal, what we have is, it's page 31 of the response brief. Why are these junk vehicles? One, because the vehicles are rusty, and two, because the vehicles are sunken into the ground. That is not the standard. That is not the definition of junk vehicle that you find in the ordinances. It needs to be a vehicle that's extensively damaged, and missing essential component parts like an engine or a transmission or something to that effect.
Catalytic converter?
As far as the catalytic converter go, I believe that's well outside the scope of the hearing. And that may apply to perhaps one of the vehicles. Being rusty doesn't meet the definition. Being sunk into the ground doesn't meet the definition here. And this has kind of been the consistent approach by Mountain Lake to simply make a conclusion but not have any actual evidence to support it. Now, in the resolution itself, we also, if you look closely at that resolution, there's actually no findings at all in the resolution. Instead, what they say is officers observed X, Y, or Z. They're simply reciting what the evidence is without making any kind of actual findings of fact. And all of this, in my view, just goes back to the idea that this has been an arbitrary, capricious decision where Mountain Lake is merely imposing its will in this case. For example, no citation at all to the ordinances. We have the resolution not trying to apply any kind of facts to any ordinances. It just kind of dumps them out there. We have new facts all of a sudden on appeal, like leaking fluids and harboring rodents that have no support in the record. We have shifting tactics now on appeal to these are abandoned vehicles. That's never been raised before. And when the municipality does not engage in this kind of genuine decision-making, that is arbitrary, capricious decision, and that alone should require reversal. See, I'm out of time. I thank you for the court.
Thank you, Mr. Ganji. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for responding, you may approach. Please introduce yourself and your clients, and then you may begin.
You have to reset.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, Your Honor. My name is Mary Ellen Surhoff, counsel for respondent, City of Mountain Lake. I would like to first argue on the matter of relator's motion to strike portions of our respondent's addendum and references to such documents in respondent's brief. More specifically, relators object to the transcript from the previous litigation between relators and City of Mountain Lake. These are admissions that Hebe Greenhouses stopped operating in 2014. The council considered this information in their decision. This fact is cited in its resolution, which is the subject of this appeal. It was also discussed during the hearing. The second set of documents are police reports regarding trespassers on the property. This safety concern was cited in the city's resolution as well as discussed at the hearing. Relators.
Police reports submitted to the council?
Not at the hearing, but was referenced at the hearing.
But I mean, reference could mean a police officer said we have had reports of trespassers there, or references could be on this date we responded and found this. And on this date, referencing the specific police reports that you included in your addendum.
The officer during the hearing stated that there were 12 calls to the property. Mr. Christensen initiated those calls. Mr. Christensen responded. There was a discussion during the hearing. Christensen complained that the officers didn't do anything to assist. Chief Bristol replied that he could not catch the trespassers in the act because it was recorded after viewing the video. And so certainly the evidence was considered by the Mountain Lake Council when determining whether to declare.
Testimonial evidence was considered.
Correct.
Not the police reports themselves.
The police reports were not before the council when they made the decision, but they were aware generally aware of those reports.
Through the testimony, and as I understand it, there was no recording, or the recording malfunctioned, and so...
Yes.
There's a statement of the proceedings.
And yes, and that statement of the proceedings in both relators and respondents' statement of the proceedings, those trespassing incidents were referred to, as well as in both briefs. In Plowman v. Copland, Bull and Company, 261 Northwest 2nd 581, the Supreme Court stated there may be exceptions whereby the court can accept evidence not produced and received in evidence below. What the court could do is consider, you know, what did the counsel consider? This is consistent with Plowman, the Plowman case, and the revised Model State Administrative Procedure Act. These disputed documents, again, were discussed at that time.
And I don't think that the documents were discussed. I think that incidences were discussed.
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that. Yes. In Ray Block, 727 Northwest 2nd, 166, the Court of Appeals cast a broader light on what could be considered. It states the reviewing court should confine itself to the facts and circumstances developed before that body. And finally, counsel received notice of the contents of the record when respondent submitted its itemized list of the record, and a motion should have been filed and objection made at that time. And I refer the Court of Appeals to In re Block for that decision, where the relators did not object to the contents of those police reports when respondent issued its itemized list of the record. Going to the argument, I would like to address some of the issues that the relators have argued this morning.
Well, I have two questions for you. The first question is, does the resolution cover the two registered vehicles? It wasn't clear from the resolution.
The resolution states that anything that was any vehicle that is unregistered or inoperable, and so the two vehicle, the two or three vehicles that are registered and they're operable. And so they would be excluded from the resolution.
Okay, and then secondly, let's talk about rank growth.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that rank growth in the eye of the beholder, or how do we know what's rank growth?
We do have a definition of rank growth in the rank growth in our ordinances states, trees, shrubbery, flower beds, and garden areas that are not reasonably maintained shall be considered rank growth. That is in our ordinance.
And what does that mean exactly?
Excessive growth not being maintained. In this case, the rank growth or trees going out of the greenhouse buildings, the roofs have collapsed and the trees are growing out. There are photographs, which I think are key evidence to our, you know, in relation to our resolution, and then they're incorporated by reference, and that is that these pictures show the trees coming out of the fences and out of the foundations and out of the building roofs, and so obviously they are not being maintained. And they're actually encompassing some of the vehicles. We couldn't see some of the license plates because of trees, you know, up in the vehicles were kind of sunk into the ground, and there was some growth around the vehicles. And so obviously not being maintained.
So appellant argues that they were granted a county exemption.
Yes.
My view is that if a broader governmental entity grants an exemption, then I don't want to say Mountain Lakes lesser, but a smaller governmental entity can't come in and take that exemption away. How do you respond?
Yes, thank you. The county variance was in 1991 when the business was operating. In fact, it was applying, first of all, the property was in the county at the time, located in the county. And it was a setback variance that they were applying for to build some of these greenhouses. And as a condition of that setback for the buildings, they said you have to maintain the property and you have to have a gravel base and park your vehicles along the south portion, which is where the road is, County Road, extension of County Road 3, where the public looks at the property. Well, after that, the city annexed the property.
Against Christensen's will.
Yes, yes, they were not in favor of it, apparently. I wasn't around at the time, but I would, that's based on his comments. And, but now the corporation is dissolved. The operation is not operating anymore. And it's not being maintained.
He says it is being operated. He's now switched crops to mulberries.
The last time it operated and actually filed a tax return was in 2015. And so he informed the council for the very first time at the hearing that he is now registering trees and trying to grow trees. And so there is a major gap. And after it was not operating for 1 year, it's a non-conforming use. After the annexation, it was changed to industrial, not commercial, industrial. And so if they wanted to continue to operate as an agricultural operation, they would have to apply for a conditional use permit, which they have never done. And so we're saying that the focus of that variance was a setback to build buildings, and that is the condition they're supposed to maintain the parking area. Well, the parking area has not been maintained, and it's been annexed.
And we can see that from the pictures. Can you point me to...
Yes.
Photos that you submitted?
There are photos that are...
I'm looking at your addendum.
Yes. So the, if you look at the...
And I wasn't exactly sure what your addendum 38 was when I looked at it.
Okay. Can you... Tell me what the title was, 38.
It's a picture. It's a Cottonwood County, Minnesota. There's a picture of a building, parcel ID, property address. Classification says agricultural.
The, it shows, I think that was, the purpose of that was to show that the title to the property is in the greenhouse name. The assessor never changed the classification.
That's agricultural.
Right, right. But in fact, our argument is that it hasn't been operating. There's no evidence that it has been operating. And as Your Honor had brought up, Your Honor, Judge Johnson, Justice Johnson referred to, well, are you actually selling anything? In the building code, it references agricultural buildings, and it talks about the delivery of products. And there has been no delivery of products to our knowledge. Mr. Christensen admitted that he hasn't sold any of the mulberry trees. There was no evidence presented by Mr. Christensen that he's been actually in commerce. And that, in fact, during the hearing, he was stating that he took some saplings from the trees, volunteer trees on the property, and he is, you know, trying to propagate, you know, mulberry trees. This is, you know, not something that is actively in commerce. Our argument is, Your Honor, that the it's not agricultural operation anymore, and it's not in an agricultural zone anymore, and therefore the agricultural exemption does not apply. In terms of the sufficiency of the evidence, council talks about junk vehicles, and junk vehicles by our ordinance does 4A on the definition says any unlicensed or unregistered motor vehicle or any inoperable vehicle. And so it's not just any vehicle which is extensively damaged or missing components that are essential to the mechanical function of the vehicle, such as motor, transmission, and wheels. It is also unlicensed and unregistered motor vehicles. In addition, if you don't have an operating battery, that's inoperable. I think that, you know, we have to look at the plain meaning of these words, the plain meaning of the ordinances, and just common sense. If, and, Your Honor, looking at the photographs, getting back to the photographs, you can see the condition of the vehicles. They are sunken into the ground, they're rusty, they haven't been moved in years. And so I think, you know, we have to apply some common sense to, and if the court would look at those photographs, it's highly unlikely that someone could, if they could find the key, get in it and actually drive away. I think that when, you know, we have to apply the plain meaning of the words. We also contend, Your Honor, that, Your Honors, that relators was, the notice was not deficient. We gave them the ordinances. We referred them to the ordinances. We told them what they needed to do to comply. We gave them a time frame. They had ample time to comply. Mr. Christensen, when during the hearing, did not state that he didn't understand, you know, what the city wanted him to do. His argument was that he was exempt.
You may sum up if you wish.
Thank you.
The buzzer was the expiration of your allowance.
Yes, thank you. The ordinance serve a public purpose, the regulation, accumulation of inoperable vehicles. Under 168B, 0.01, which is the state statute nuisance law, it states why we even have 168B. And the only difference there is it's under whether the owner, it relates to abandoned vehicles. And the only difference is that it talks about whether the vehicles are on the owner's property or somebody left an abandoned vehicle on somebody else's property without their consent. But the effect on the environment and the community is the same, whether it's on, you know, the greenhouse owns the property, so it's not, you know, imposing on another owner's property. But the issues are the same. So should we go back to 168B, the state nuisance statute or state law, and say that's unconstitutional? I mean, we have land use controls for a variety of reasons, and one of them is for the, you know, enjoyment, you know, the for the character, the community enjoyment of and comfort of life, and there are a variety of land use controls that have been upheld, and so what the relators are suggesting that the city has to do as proof is unreasonable and would just make land use controls obsolete or ineffective. And so we think that we asked the court to uphold the resolution. Resolution was clear. It was constitutional. They had adequate notice. We do have the health and safety concerns of the community, and so we ask the court, the safety concerns being the trespassing, the children, and even adults going on the property, and the deteriorating vehicles, which can have, each of those vehicles likely has, you know, gas and oil in them, and just that kind of environment encourages vermin and so forth. So if we can't have land use, well, we can't enforce our land use controls or minimum standards for the community, then our land use or zoning kind of goes out the window. And so we ask the court to uphold the city's resolution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ganji, you have an opportunity for rebuttal. As soon as we... Okay, good. We're set to go.
Thank you. A couple of points I wanted to comment on. First, the last point about public safety and trespassers. Even if that's the case, the trespassers...
Come on, I'll pause you just a minute. I thought your microphone wasn't picking up. Maybe it is now.
Is that better?
It is better.
Okay. So briefly on the trespassers, if that's the public safety concern, that's never been tied to the presence of the vehicles on the property. It's never been tied to the presence of growth on the property. With respect to the zone that this is in, the zoning map is part of both of our addendums. This is the commercial general zone. I don't know why the city keeps saying this is an industrial zone. With respect to the junk vehicles, it sounds like the city is now saying that an unregistered vehicle is a junk vehicle. I was giving the city the benefit of the doubt there by tying the two sub-paragraphs together and requiring both, but if the city is actually taking the position that all you need is an unregistered vehicle to be declared a junk vehicle, then certainly that would be well overbroad. And then I also wanted to comment on just the broad scope of this resolution and with particular emphasis on the growth. There's no identification in the resolution as to what growth is actually the rank growth and what Mr. Christensen actually needs to do to remedy the situation, other than saying clean up the property. And this is not a theoretical problem because the Mountain Lake, in fact, the last paragraph of their brief, explains that this applies to the entire property. They classify this as 11 acres of rank growth. And certainly the hearing did not present evidence on the entire 11 acres, let alone 11 acres of rank growth. But yet that is the scope of the resolution. That is how broad it is phrased. And Mountain Lake is using that resolution as a way to basically go onto the property and clean up anything that they want, whether it was presented at the hearing or not.
Can you give an example of what you think is an appropriately specific resolution? I mean, if rank growth is the problem, how would that be expressed in a resolution? How would the particular problem be identified?
If rank growth is a problem, I would expect that the resolution would identify where the rank growth is and why it meets the definition of rank growth. We don't have that in the resolution. That is a problem with not only the enforcement of the resolution, but also compliance with the resolution. As Mr. Christensen may decide that the city was referring to something, but then it turns out the city was actually referring to something else.
Well, as I understand it, the city tried to meet with him on the property, and he didn't want the city on the property. Is that right?
There's been a number of meetings, Your Honor, and this, I don't know if this is reflected in the record, but there have been a number of meetings, both on the property and off the property. The city did eventually get a search warrant, and so they were allowed to go on property and look at whatever they wanted to on the property. And we were there when it was supposed to be executed, and the officer never showed up. And then I believe they took pictures from the street eventually, and maybe went on when Mr. Christensen wasn't around and took a couple other pictures. But this has been an ongoing issue of the city explaining to Mr. Christensen that they want something done, but never explaining why, never explaining how the facts that they're complaining of meet any of the ordinances, or showing why they're in violation. And I think that's a critical piece to why we're here. And I would ask the court to reverse this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ganji. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. It was well briefed and well argued. The case is now submitted, and the court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.